Welcome to The Deadline, podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. I'm Laura, your host and founder of said society. And I'm here tonight, as always, with Brian, our producer.
I better be here.
Yeah, otherwise we wouldn't have a show. So how are you, Brian?
Oh, same.
Yeah? Did you have a good 4th of July?
I better have. I don't remember it.
Aw.
I slept through it, I think.
Where I am, I'm able to go out on my balcony, and across the farm I can see the different fireworks going off, so I don't even have to drive anywhere to go see them, so that worked out nicely.
Do you have to move the cows out of the way?
No. I'm across from a corn farm, you know, like a produce farm. The cows are down the street at that farm by ShopRite. But yeah, I'm able to sit out there on the balcony and just watch the different fireworks go off, and you know, I have my little George Foreman grill since I'm in an apartment, so I grilled some burgers. You know, nice. Patriotic as always. But and our town doesn't do a 4th of July parade. They make a big deal out of Memorial Day, and they don't do squat for 4th of July. So,
well, I guess probably more older crowd there that fought in the wars, so they probably think of that more close than the 4th of July. 4th of July, it's kind of losing its finesse.
It's significance, yeah. Really. It's a day off from work. And now it's such
sometimes.
A bummer. They don't even like move it to where you could have a long weekend. If it falls on the Wednesday, then that's the day you get off. And if you want to take any time before or after, which really stinks because the fireworks are at night. And it's like, dude, well, they usually don't even start till after 9 because you got to wait for it to be dark enough. So by the time it's done, it's 10:30, 11 o'clock, and then you got to get up. And it hangs over your head the whole day. I got to go to work tomorrow. So it's like you really can't have much fun.
So why don't you just work from home?
Well, yeah, if you can, if a lot of people aren't coming in anyway. I mean, I'll look at the calendar if a lot of people are taking vacation. Namely, like, oh, you know what? My key boss will be on vacation.
There you go.
So if all the other ones follow suit, then yeah, I would just work from home. Because, I mean, I can easily get up to work on my start time. It's just I have to get up so early to get to work for my start time, you know. But, yeah, anyway. But, yeah, in this case, I didn't. You know why? I figured I'd better schlep into the office because I do want to work from home when we have the National Sales Conference, which is after, you know.
I'm on vacation that week, so.
Yeah, so at least this way I can, after all the Ghost World festivities, you know, I'm going to be pretty beat. That's going to use up a lot of adrenaline doing that Ghost World conference. So I'm probably just going to be zoned, so I won't be able to drive to work anyway. And my drive is miserable.
Friday, when I get there Friday, I'll probably be zoned because I'm going to work a half a day and then head in. So I don't have to take another day.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going out Thursday. And now I found out X-Zone is going to be doing their show Thursday night and Friday night, so I don't know. I thought I'd have Thursday to get out there and work on putting the balloons and decorations together, and then Jeff's like, well, no, you know, Rob McConnell's going to be on the air from 10 to 2. I'm like, I'm not going to be up till 2 a.m. working on it. And Jeff's like, well, I'll probably be in and out. And I'm like, oh, God. So we've got a lot.
Well, that's because, you know, he takes speed.
He said, oh, he's funny. Anyway, let's get to the meeting announcement, shall we?
Sure.
We have on July 17th is the Northwest Division meeting, and that's in the Community Center located at 293 Main Street in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the Blue Room, headed up by Dina Chirico, our team leader for the Northwest Division. The Northeast Division meeting is on July 26th. That is headed up by team leader Laura Lindemann. And that's in the Bogota Recreation Center located at 162 West Main Street in Bogota. And there is no July meeting for the Central Jersey Division because it would have been the 4th of July. So the Central Jersey Division, headed up by team leaders Gregory and Sherry Irish, will have their meeting August 1st in the Hazlitt Library located at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt. And just a reminder on the presentations I'll be doing this summer, the Mysteries of the Paranormal. You can catch me at the Brick Branch of the Ocean County Library on July 9th at 7 p.m., the Rahway Public Library on July 12th at 6:30 p.m., and the Old Bridge Library on July 28th at 1:30 p.m. So if you're available, come on out and see the presentation. And we're just going to go to a commercial. Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts, get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations, and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey, 07054. Happy haunting.
Hi, I'm Mark Skirman.
And I'm Mark Moran.
We travel on the roads more weird with our show Weird U.S.
And you're listening to The Deadline, podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society.
Okay, it's time for Parashares. Parashares is the part of the show where you, the listener, email the deadline at njghs.net your paranormal experience, ghostly tale, something that you found out of the ordinary and that you've encountered or experienced, and we read it during this part of the show, right, Brian?
Well, that's what we'd usually do, but you deadbeats out there won't send us freaking nothing.
You're killing me here, people. You are killing me. I have to go, like, combing through books and websites and coming up with stuff to talk about and, you know?
You know, look, we don't have enough in our lives. You know, you can make our life a little bit
easier.
And I
know they're out there listening to the show going, oh, I had this happen one time. Oh, because you know how I know? When I do a presentation, I have all I can do to get to my freaking car with people coming up to me. Oh, and this happened. Oh, what do you look at this picture? Oh, what about that? And I'm like, look, I've worked all day. I have been gracious. I came out. I did this presentation. It's now 9 o'clock. I have a 2.5-hour ride home. I want to get to my car. And all these people come out of the woodwork with their stories, but do they? And I tell them, oh, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. Would you email here? Here's my card. Email the deadline. I'd love
to. Oh, that means I got to work.
Yeah. I've even offered them, hey, we have eVoice. Or if you want, record it and send me an MP3. And like one woman did in Georgia, and we could just play it.
That's work.
Well, people, you know, I know you're out there. I know you come up to me after these presentations and stuff. I know you have the stories. Email them to thedeadline@njghs.net.
When you go and do your presentations, bring your digital recorder. If someone tells you a story, hand them your recorder. Say, tell it to this.
Oh, all right.
And we'll just edit it, and boom, there we go, a parashare.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so since we don't have a parashare, I was thumbing through the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, written by famous author Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and I came across the subject of ghost sickness. Now I'm going to read, since it's very short, I'm going to read to you from her book verbatim about ghost sickness. The belief that ghosts of the dead can cause illness and death. In the animistic system of beliefs, characteristics of tribal societies around the world, the spirit of a deceased person is thought to remain close to the corpse for a few days before beginning its journey to the land of the dead, and during this in-between or liminal period, it is particularly dangerous to the living. The ghost is portrayed as lonely in its new existence and so inclined to seek company from among the living. Children in particular are susceptible to ghost sickness because their souls are less strong or less firmly attached to their bodies. Among the Kwakiutl, I can't even say it, it's Kwakiutl Indians of British Columbia, children are sometimes disguised or referred to as adults in order to confuse the ghosts into thinking that they are older than they are. Fear of ghost sickness accounts for the widespread fear of the dead as expressed in such practices as carrying the corpse out of the house through a hole in the wall rather than through a window or door, which is intended to make it difficult for the ghost to find its way back home. Although ghosts are most feared immediately after death. In many societies, any sighting of an apparition or sounds suggestive of a poltergeist are harbingers of disease or death. Now, I can see where children would be more susceptible. Not so much that their souls are weak, but because children Their aura is so much brighter because they're so innocent. They haven't contaminated it and punctured all these holes and making, like, sickly Swiss cheese. As it gets, as you get older and more grounded and into the whole societal stream of thinking, children have this pure light and innocence. So their aura is magnificent. It's bright. And I think what happens is when someone dies, they can walk by a child or float by a child and confuse that child's light for the light that they're supposed to go to. And they maybe end up inadvertently attaching to that child. And if that person has all kinds of issues and problems, that child may start to exhibit those things, whether it's a mental problem or getting sick, you know. And I could see that accounting for some of the ghost sickness, you know. I've also seen, like with the Ouija board, how people who have used that and brought through different negative souls and entities and things, and they begin to get physically ill. The operator of the Ouija board begins to get physically ill or have a stream of bad luck, and, you know.
Well, Ouija boards are bad. No one believes me, but they are.
They are. They really are. They're a very low vibratory tool, and like attracts like, so you're just opening up a portal for all the crap that was on this side, like your rapists and your murderers. That's what's on the other side via the Ouija board, and, you know, and they lie. A lot of times they come through and they tell you, oh, I'm your great aunt so-and-so, and here I help you find your ring that you lost, or I help you with your homework to build your confidence and trust in them, and then that's it. It's progressive entrapment, people. It's possession. It's bad news.
Well, someone said that if you use a Ouija board, what is the thing on top called?
The planchette?
Yeah. That you're not supposed to leave it unattended?
Well, no, you can leave it unattended, but you should never operate the board alone or by yourself. You know, it has to be with someone else.
Someone had mentioned that, because a couple of us were on a message board talking about that, and they had mentioned that. I'd never heard that before.
No. Well, you're going to leave it alone if you put it in the box. You mean leaving it out on the table so it could actually move and write something?
Right.
That would be, I could see that if you already had a major entity that you brought through when you were operating it, and you didn't really know how to, like, I don't know how to word it, like close the circle or close the portal, and that thing remained attached to that board where it was moving it at will. But usually stuff that comes through the board is really looking, they're parasitic, and they're looking for a host, you know, so I don't really see them that much moving the board and the planchette around.
I don't know. I said I'd never heard that before, so I was like, oh, let me bring that up.
Yeah. So that's your thing on ghost sickness. I can see where, I mean, there's a lot of weird, when you go back through time and you see all the different practices, like when someone died, you know, to cover all the mirrors in the house with a black cloth because they were afraid that the soul would get trapped in that kind of in-between state of the mirror realm, and, you know, and some people believe that the mirrors were portals and spirits could come and go through them, so they covered them, and all this neat stuff. But the ghost sickness, you know, I guess I could see, like, them mistaking the child's aura for the light to go to. But, you know, I mean, that's why when my kids were little, and, you know, like my older one, you know, he knew, you know, that his daddy and I were going out and ghost hunting, and he wanted to come along. And I knew, no way, you know, I can't take you in a cemetery because there's no telling what's in there that's going to mistake you and latch on to you. And, you know, so I waited for them to get older and, you know.
Boy, my aura must be as black as night because they run away from me.
You blend.
It's the way to hell. Run.
Oh, no. It's true. I mean, you can see, they say how the third eye is shut down by the age of 7. So unless you really worked to keep that open in your child, which both mine, I just left it open. I just figured, you know what, if they come to me and they say, I see this, I hear that, I never gave them, oh, there's no such thing as. I just asked them more questions. And and it's amazing. You ask a child a question and you do get a very intelligent answer. I mean, they have, if they've never been told no, it doesn't exist, they're just giving you their honest, you know, appreciation of what they've seen or experienced. And it's, you know, pretty enlightening. So, anything else?
Nope.
Okay, commercial.
The Ghost World Conference is coming to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, July 20 to 22, 2007. Don't miss the opportunity to take part in the paranormal event of the year. There will be workshops, a trade show, renowned ghost experts and authors, a paranormal awards ceremony honoring the achievements of ghost researchers, and an open symposium. Visit ghostworldconference.com for more information. That's ghostworldconference.com.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
Okay, you know what? We have a new feature here, Spooky Reviews. This one is written by Dina Chirico, team leader of the Northwest Division for the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. And Dina wrote a very good review of the movie 1408. Now, Brian and I will get to this because we've both seen it and we have our input as well. But this is the review from team leader Dina Chirico. Here it goes. 1408 is the second thriller set around a hotel released in less than 2 months. The other being April's Vacancy, and is by far the superior film. The film is actually quite subtle in its way of creeping us out and disturbing us. Rather than bombard the audience with ghostly special effects and gore, the movie gets under your skin and goes for a much more psychological approach. The screenplay by Matt Greenberg, Scott Alexander, and Larry Karaszewski wisely does not even attempt to explain Room 1408. It's just a very evil presence that can somehow look deep within troubled souls and torture them to death with their own personal demons. In the wrong hands, this material could have been laughable. Even though the movie frequently flies into the realm of the unbelievable, it manages to somehow stay grounded. Mike Enslin, played by John Cusack, used to be a promising author until the untimely death of his young daughter, Katie, played by Jasmine Jessica Anthony. He now spends his time writing trashy paranormal novels about the world's most haunted areas. He travels the world doing research by staying overnight at places that are supposed to be haunted, gets some colorful background info that he can use for material, and then moves on to his next job. One day, Mike receives a postcard informing him of an old hotel in New York City called the Dolphin Hotel, which is supposed to have a room that has quite the history. Doing some private research, he learns that the Dolphin has had a long and tragic history of deaths, all of them surrounding the guests that have stayed in room 1408. Mike books the room, despite the warnings of the hotel manager, Gerald Olin, played by Samuel L. Jackson. Entering the room, nothing seems ominous at first, but then the room itself begins to take on a life of its own and begins tormenting Mike with various ghostly apparitions, mind tricks, and even displaying his own painful past before him in various ways. This hotel room that isn't just haunted, but is actually a place where the universe's physical laws, especially the ones that deal with trivial matters such as space and time, don't really apply, and the room itself is a sentient manifestation of evil. The film wastes relatively little time setting up Mike Enslin's character and situation, but once it's all on the table, you find yourself incapable of escaping either. I have seen a couple of reviews which attack 1408 for lack of characterization. These reviewers must have wandered into the wrong theater because they've not seen the same film I just saw. My advice to these reviewers is try paying more attention to what you're watching instead of your preconceptions about the genre. Cusack's character is beautifully set up. From his editors, he can get kind of he should have put remark, because the editor makes the remark, he can get kind of morose, to his more or less constant drinking, painful flashbacks, focusing on his daughter, and inability to communicate with people he cares about. It's all there, for those who have the attention span and sensitivity to look for it. Cusack's performance is a tour de force of physical and psychological acting. Having a hard time imagining him in this role? Take what Cusack did in Being John Malkovich, quadruple the intensity, the fear, and the suspense, add alcoholism and self-denial, and there you have Mike Enslin. I never doubted that Cusack had the talent, but was actually surprised to see him pull it off so well. The rest of the cast all have fairly minor roles, but are fine. This is essentially a one-man show for most of its running time, with fleeting apparitions being his main companions. Cusack has long been a favorite of mine, and this is one of his stronger recent roles. He not only has to carry almost the entire film on his own, but he also has to convincingly act like he is slowly going insane without hamming it up or losing his personality. Any actor can tell you that madness is a difficult thing to depict. He strikes a very good balance and remains believable throughout. Samuel L. Jackson is also notable in his small but no less important role as the manager who tries to talk Mike out of his decision to stay in the room. And then, of course, there is Room 1408, which is a character itself. The way it is constantly changing itself right down to the paintings on the wall creates an effectively creepy atmosphere that is so continuously bizarre, but never so much so that we lose our sense to believe. Mikael Hafstrom did a very nice job with directing, creating the most atmospheric and downright tense thriller so far this year. There is never a pointless scene, nor a dull moment, nor any loose ends. The plot is spelled out in detail, and all the clues are there to unravel the mysteries, but the clues are not so unsubtle as to permit you to guess what's next. As I said before, the feeling and pace of King's work come through very nicely. The special effects are also very convincing, and the camera work is picture perfect. The human element of Mike Enslin is always at the center of the story itself, and it scares. I guess she meant, and it's scary. I don't know why it says it scares. Oh, and it scares. Okay. The movie is built around the fact that he is forced to face his personal demons the longer he stays in his room, as well as try to keep his mind in check as various nightmarish hallucinations are paraded before him. It's much more effective than the usual characters that have passed as villains in recent paranormal films, usually gray-skinned people with hair over their faces. And it never once becomes heavy-handed or preachy. This is also a tricky balance to pull off. When the room started showing him flashbacks of Mike's own past, I grew nervous, thinking that the movie was going to start hitting us over the head with morals. Fortunately, it never once loses its sense of the eerie and remains appropriately unsettling throughout. 1408 succeeds where so many other films have failed in that it is not about apparitions jumping out at the actors or lurking in dark shadows. It digs much deeper for its horror than simple jolt thrills and becomes an effectively thrilling horror film. It could be argued that the whole thing loses some weight when we apply logic to the story. But seriously, who wants to apply logic to a movie about an evil hotel room that can read your mind? When all is said and done, 1408 is a reminder of what horror can do on a psychological level. It can do so much more than thrill us. It can also make us laugh and leave us captivated. Perhaps what's more surprising is the fact that the movie can accomplish all that as so few other horror films can. Whew! Well, thank you, Dina. That was a very detailed, thorough, I would say, you know, right on the money encapsulation of the movie, 1408. What do you think, Brian?
Siskel and Ebert got nothing on her.
I know, right? I mean, she dissected the characters, the storyline, the directors, the writers. Amazing.
Did her fingers hurt after she typed all that?
What?
Did her fingers hurt after she typed all that?
Oh, they must have. I mean, it was a good two and a half pages in Microsoft Word when I copied and pasted from the email into Microsoft so I could print it out. But thank you very much for that, Dean. I have to tell you, I saw the movie this past Saturday night, and I mean, I've always been a fan of Cusack myself. I think he's pretty good. He's a good actor. And but he was phenomenal in this. He's really come, it's like his come-of-age pick. And I have to tell you, the person that I went to see the movie with is, by profession, a videographer and movie person, and has worked professionally for the NBA and in TV capacity and so forth. So he knows film editing, okay? And he said from a he was watching the movie closely from the film editing editor's perspective, and he said, bravo, that they did a phenomenal job, because he said, like that scary scene when Cusack is, I don't want to give too much of the movie away, but where he's looking out the window and waving to the guy at the building across the way to try and get help. And then you can kind of see in the reflection that there's somebody behind him in his hotel room. Well, my friend said that he said the editing was done flawlessly on that. The fact that it was like a split second that they had that scary image on the screen and then it cut, and then you were like, and he said that is the mark of a good film editor, because it was like so quick and it was seamless, and it was like enough that it shocked you. You're like, wait, what was that? And it was just moving. The movie kept going, and he said they did an amazing job on the editing.
Yeah, when I saw it right after it came out, and I was lucky because I happened to catch the first showing, so there was only like maybe four or five other people in the theater.
Uh-huh.
And walked out of there like that was probably one of the best movies this summer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though it's not going to make a lot of money, and it's not going to get all the big, you know, press and the fame, all the big blockbusters will, but you know what? That's one of the things that'll live on the shelf for a long time.
Yeah, it's definitely something when it comes out on DVD I'm buying for my collection. You know, and there's only a few movies when I see in the theater that when I stand up when the lights come up and I say that wow, this is going to go in the collection when it comes out, and this is definitely one of them. It was a good scary movie, you know. It wasn't like
it didn't have
all the gore and chop them up. It just scared you. There was that one part in the air shaft that he's climbing in. And that scary guy is there. I wasn't the only female in the theater that went, ah! You know. I mean, an audible like eek came out. You know, several women.
You shouldn't be going eek anymore.
Well, it was just like it shocked you when them. You know, like you know, you get one of those, and it was good. It was just, you know, playing with your mind like that. And then, come on, from a ghost hunter perspective, when he's saying how he checks into these hotels and he writes these stories, it was like, oh my God, this is so up our alley.
Well,
and at the very end, when, you know, he finds his beat-up recorder and he plays it, and how his wife just drops the laundry or whatever the hell she was holding. I mean, did that not freak you out or what?
Well, he did do something bad, though.
What?
Oh, come on, you know what he did.
He was drinking?
Exactly.
Oh, come on, that's not bad if you're stuck in a room that nuts.
No.
According to New Jersey Ghost Hunter protocol.
No, not when he was in that room, when he was at the bed and breakfast.
Oh, well, yeah, but he's not an investigator, like, adhering to protocols like we do. He's
being
a writer.
But you know, people see that movie and they'll think that.
Okay, well, we'll set the record straight right here and now. It's one of our protocols. We do not imbibe while on an investigation.
Afterwards.
Afterwards, you find us at the local pub. All right, well, thanks again to Dean Tirico for writing that. That was very good. And thanks to you, Brian, for chiming in and having seen the movie. And we can't urge people enough. Go see it. It's very cool.
Okay, it's time for Haunted Trivia. Now, last week's question, you were asked, what is the name of the highway with the phantom cars and trucks that cause accidents or near misses? And I gave you a hint that it runs just outside Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, which, if you know your geography, Bachelor's Grove is located in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, I was wrong. I was going to say the New Jersey Turnpike.
No. So the answer is the Midlothian Turnpike. Okay. This week's Haunted Trivia has a skill level of challenging. In Jerome, Arizona, a very haunted town overall, given the 77-year mining history wherein $1 billion worth of gold, silver, and copper were mined, is home to the ghostly prostitute who still roams the street just in front of the community center and heads towards the Little Daisy Hotel and vanishes. It is said that she was accidentally stabbed to death by a fight between two minors. There are so many ghosts in this town that there was a newspaper called the Jerome Ghost Post. It's not in existence anymore, though. One can still visit the Spirit Room Bar and dine at the Haunted Hamburger Restaurant. But what do the locals call the community center? Okay, so the locals, what do they call their community center? Be the first person to email the correct answer to hauntedtrivia@njghs.net and you will win a Junior Ghost Hunters t-shirt. So, we're going to wrap it up here. I'm going to remind everybody, ghostworldconference.com, you know, make sure you're, because gosh, you know, July 15th is the last day to register online, so it's countdown, people.
Unless you want to send me like $400, I'll make sure you got a ticket.
Yeah. And let's see, the presenter dinner, we've got spots left for that. It's $50 per person. It's an awesome meal that includes tax and tip and yada yada. And don't forget the July 13th show. Vince and Jeff will be on with us, which will be good.
And you.
Well, yeah. And yeah, so it's exciting. It's getting there. So make sure if you haven't registered, you do so. So stay tuned to the njghs.net website and sign up for the Yahoo groups as well to get the latest and greatest info. And if any cemetery hunts are postponed due to rain or canceled altogether, you do get the latest and greatest info on that from Yahoo groups. All right? So, thanks again to Brian Sant, the wonderful NJGHS technician and producer of The Deadline.
Hail to the king.
And our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish, Dina Chirico, and Laura Lindemann. And as always, thanks to you, Don Slepian of DonSlepian.com, for our theme song, Dance of the Dead. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening and voting on Podcast Alley. Keep downloading the shows weekly, because at some point in life, you have to meet The Deadline.